Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, we're about to kick off fall, so that means you must be traveling every week. Then where'd you go?
Yes, I did. I went to Philadelphia, went to a wedding held at a zoo. I got to feed the giraffes. Everything was first cabin. It was my wife's best friend's growing up, her daughter, and it was wonderful. I got to kind of navigate, go through my wife's neighborhood where she grew up. It was old home week there. And the Philly cheesesteaks really are better in Philadelphia. That is not a myth.
All right. So what do we got today?
Hey, this is going to be a fantastic show, man. First up on Atlanta Business Radio, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast CEO with Digital Resolve, Mr. Bill Kalpin. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Bill, before we get too far into things, can you tell us a little bit about Digital Resolve? How are you serving folks?
Digital Resolve was founded about 15 years ago to help address the growing threat of online cybercrime and fraud. Initially focused on financial institutions, we help protect legitimate access to financial information and personal information, and we do it in a way that preserves the user experience. So the good guys get in easily, and the cyber criminals have a much tougher time. Hopefully, can't get in at all. So
now cybersecurity is becoming such a big thing, it has its own month now. How did that happen?
It has. The Department of Homeland Security has the overall responsibility for global cybersecurity. And so October kicks off what has been a number of annual events now, and basically focused on uniting government and the public in battling cybercrime. It's a joint effort because it needs a joint solution. Technologies are great. People are great, but you can't have a technology that stops everything. People can't stop it on their own. So that combination is really a key to helping to battle cybercrime. And, it's about a $2 trillion expense, wow, estimated by the Pentagon. So, we're not going to stop it. We're not going to win the war, but working together, I think we can improve things quite a bit.
Are we winning?
I think we're winning more than we used to, but there are a lot of smart people out there that are figuring out ways to attack consumers and attack businesses. There was a day when the cyber criminals were after money. They were focused on banks. They were focused on compromising personal accounts and brokerage accounts. Now they've discovered that there's a dark web market for personal information. So we've all read about very publicized breaches of major companies housing lots of personal information. So that's become an economy in itself, and it's gone from being the old speculation was it was a teenager in the garage with too much time on their hands and curiosity and skill. Now it's organized crime and actually state-sponsored activities as well. So,
and the work that they're doing is kind of like business people. They're going into businesses with whiteboards, and they're planning out how to attack a vulnerable company.
Yeah, I'm not sure they have good marketing departments because you can't find out too much about them.
I'm sure their advertising budget's not very high, yeah, but I'm sure their talent recruiting budget's pretty high.
Yeah, they are absolutely organized business, and you can go on the dark web and buy all sorts of tools. You can buy data, but you can also buy the exploit tools to help you breach companies or find ways into things. And yeah, it's a very sophisticated business these days.
Now, if these larger firms that are well-known and name-brand firms are getting hacked, how does the little guy stand a chance?
Well, that's a great point. There was a time when, as I said, banks were the targets, and especially the big banks. As the big banks shored up their defenses, the cybercrime moved down to different levels. And now everyone is a target, small businesses. It doesn't matter what you do. If you house employee information, if you house customer information, then you're a legitimate target to be attacked. And the average cost, if a credential compromise attack, often called phishing, we could talk about that later if we want, if that's successful, a small business can spend $1.6 million to resolve that. So it's a problem for everybody. It's a problem for individuals too, but the businesses run reputational risk as well as financial risk.
So is there any low-hanging fruit a business can do to kind of shore up some kind of simple weaknesses?
Absolutely. They could certainly deploy digital resolve technology, but prior to that, they could train their employees. Many of the well-publicized breaches occurred because an individual gave up their user ID and password. And passwords have always been suspect in terms of not being adequate to really protect sensitive information. So an a phishing attack is basically a well-crafted email that is intended to lure an employee or a consumer into giving up personal information like a user ID and password. So there are technologies that can run behind the scenes. So when you and I enter our ID and password, there's a behavioral check behind the scenes that looks to see if that's typical of how that user looks in their online profile. If it's suspicious, we can also offer a one-time password, send a PIN to a phone, ask a personal question. So lots of ways to stop it, but it does start with education. Employees and consumers need to be aware that if you get an email that looks suspicious, it's asking for personal information, best not to respond to it.
So it's like if everybody on our team right now, Lee, across Age Studios, if they got an email that said, hey, it's time for your annual bonus. We've had a great year. Just send us your login and password for the website so that we can tie that to your compensation. I mean, I bet there's some people that would answer that and do that. That happened, right?
Unfortunately, the answer is yes. Yeah. And
Well, I'll take it up a notch, and I'm sure you've seen this as well. I saw recently that now with this kind of digital faking, you can get someone's voice and they can leave a voicemail that says that exact same thing. And how many people?
And it would sound just like you. With as much audio as we have on file, it's probably easy to do it for us, right?
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, you just gave the cyber crooks a great idea. So change your payroll passwords quickly. So, yeah, excellent point. I mean, even really bright people can be lured into it. And there was a time when the phishing emails were not grammatically correct. They didn't have great graphics. Now they're really good. And they can go on LinkedIn and figure out that you two work together. So they may send an email from you to you, and that's plausible. And he's asking to borrow money again. You think, okay, that's a normal sort of thing. So just all sorts of creative processes now that make it much harder to tell the bad emails. So
now what are you supposed to do? Like if something seems amiss, like should I try to call him? Like, is that should be standard operating procedure? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, if it looks amiss, don't click. Don't give any information. Validate the source of the email or phone calls, which can also happen, and go back to the source in your own way. So use a phone number you know, use an email address you know. But yeah, basically, if it looks suspicious, delete it, or at least don't do anything with it until you find out if it's valid or not. So
now, what is the crooks are looking for? What in order? Like, is it? It used to be money, but now it's personal data? Or
it's still money. I mean, there's still a lot that goes on. Just about every day you get an email that says, if you're a customer of this bank, we've had an issue with your account. Please click here to reset your password. You'll be locked out and your funds will be frozen. Something that usually gives you a terrifying reason not to respond. Mm-hmm. They're counting on that. So, the best thing to do is just to ignore those sorts of things. So,
but in today's world where the customer is expecting instant gratification in terms of they want the speed and response, mm-hmm. and then the company's got to deliver that speed in concert with knowing that the person is really the person, like it just seems so difficult.
It is, and businesses want to deal online, and certainly that online activity has opened up a lot of opportunities for us in business and in communications, but we just have to be careful about it. And a business should never ask online for passwords or user IDs or personal information unless it's in the context of the transaction. Obviously, when you log into your bank account, you expect to give a user ID and password. You wouldn't normally be asked to give a social security number and certainly not a full social security number. So those out-of-pattern communications should never happen with businesses, whether it's banks or online commerce, anything. So businesses need to be careful not to let their customers think that they're ever going to do that. Another thing that's very common is businesses send out emails with links, and links can easily be redirected to a fake site. So if the consumer clicks on it, thinking it's legitimate, they end up thinking they're at the legitimate site, and instead they're just someplace that is trying to house or trying to dupe them into giving up information. So, and as you said earlier, it is still about money, but if they can trick you into giving up your bank account information, that's certainly easy money. But the big money seems to be in getting access to personal information and then reselling that to multiple people on the dark web that will use it to create fictitious identities, fake credit cards, new accounts in your name. And that's the whole world of identity theft, which is a kind of a similar but different topic and another really scary area.
So now talk about Digital Resolve. Who is your typical client? Are you dealing with enterprise level customers, or is your client the small to mid-sized businesses? Or
so they vary. We started out in the banks, so naturally the big banks, the regionals, but we have large top 10 North American banks all the way down to small banks and credit unions. More recently, over the last couple of years, as the fraud focus has shifted to the small and medium-sized businesses, we've stepped in to offer our solutions to that group. So just as I said, everybody is a target, everybody is a prospect, not just for Digital Resolve, but for any company in the industry. We are a great technology, but we're not able to stop everything. The right approach in security is a layered approach. So you have to look and find the right solutions, and you have to work with your partners to make sure that as new threats evolve, new attack vectors evolve, that you're providing the feedback to your security providers to help them adjust accordingly. So
now what's the typical point of entry? Is it they've had a breach of some kind and they're like, oh, we don't know what to do, so we got to call the Digital Resolve folks?
It can usually start even simpler than that. Many of our customers were the targets of phishing emails. One of our largest customers was one of the most phished banks in the country. And they knew that because customers were calling them saying, did you send this email? And they had a lot of people that gave up credentials that created compromise. Mm-hmm. So, basically deployed our technology, and within 24 hours of deploying it, they had solved the problem. And within a matter of days, they were no longer phished at all. The bad guys have come back. They're always going to kind of refresh their prospect list as they go into their sales meetings. But but you can at least deter them. And cyber criminals are, I guess, like a lot of businesses, we like to go for the easy money. We like to go for the low-hanging fruit, as you called it. So if they can't get into your place, they're going to go to your neighbor. They're going to go to a business like you.
So they'll take that same strategy and then just deploy it with a different company.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Tried and true business formula. And,
right.
Yeah. So
how did you get into this line of work? What is your backstory?
Well, I spent early years in technology with a company called Burroughs. Not around anymore.
I'm old enough to remember that.
Okay,
name.
Well, that's back in the days, it was IBM and Burroughs, and then Burroughs merged with Sperry and became Unisys. Went from there into finance, so I worked with Citibank for a number of years. And when I moved to Atlanta, I was with Equifax. So a lot of involvement in personal information and security and protection and the sensitivity of financial transactions. And I was involved in a startup that was sold off, and Digital Envoy had a need for a CEO, so joined the company, and really we started the Digital Resolve business at about that time, 15 years ago. So
how does the whole sales and marketing thing work for something like this? My instincts are everybody wants to know more about it. Most of us feel like we ought to be doing something about it. And it seems like maybe it's a kind of a crowded marketplace, but maybe I'm reading that wrong. But how does that whole sales and marketing thing work for you guys?
Yeah, it is a really crowded marketplace. There are some really, really big companies. We're not among those. We're a good sized company, but compete with publicly traded companies that are off the charts in terms of size. We compete based on our responsiveness, our customer service, and our ability to turn on a dime when an attack happens or changes so that we can help our customers really in real time, on the fly, make a change that stops whatever it is they're dealing with at the time. I'm not saying we're the only company that can do that, but that is a big part of it. So one of the interesting things about our sales and marketing is we go to shows, we do advertise, but we never publicize who our customers are. We made the decision back a long time ago that if somebody knows you're using Digital Resolve, then you've got a target on your back. And they'll go to the website, they'll come to us and pretend to be a customer and look to find out what we're doing so they can use it. So in hindsight, we sometimes wish we hadn't been so smart about that, because it'd be much nicer if your big customers are out there telling everybody. But we believe it's very effective. And if I named off our customers, you'd recognize all of them. You've never seen any of them in the press for the breaches or security issues that a lot of companies have had. So very proud of that. And we justify our decision not to publicize their names based on that.
So, but you meet them at the shows, like is there a trade show where people like you all gather, or people that have this challenge all gather?
Yeah, the trade show industry around cybersecurity and fraud is probably as big as cybercrime itself. Lots of organizations that sponsor those. The government sponsors workshops and forums as well. So and consulting companies. So yeah, there's no lack of opportunities to go and meet people that have the problem, or are just being smart and looking to anticipate the next issue that they're going to deal with and find a solution to it before it actually hits.
And then you can have like a real conversation with some of these people. They're exploring a lot of alternatives. You're meeting them face to face. You're having a real conversation. And it sounds like you feel like you guys are more agile and nimble and might very well be able to respond to some of these needs better.
We certainly,
some
yeah,
folks.
We certainly believe so. And it's actually an interesting conversation, because back when we were talking with the big banks, we knew they were all having problems, but they'd agree to a 2-hour meeting and to hear everything we had to say. But when you said, well, what kind of problems are you having? Well, we're really not having any problems. So when you try to sell to somebody that won't acknowledge they even have the problem, you really have to kind of fish around to hit the spot where they suddenly sit upright in the chair and want to talk about something. So, but that's the nature of cybercrime, cybersecurity. You don't want to acknowledge the problem, but you're smart enough to know you still need to deal with it.
And so, I would imagine it's tricky in terms of like content marketing, where you can't kind of do a lot of education about your secrets, because all you're doing is tipping off the bad guys about how your approach is. So you have to be kind of ambiguous in general, and then but still build the trust with your customer for them to believe that you know what you're doing and you have a solution.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely true. As I said, if the bad guys know that Bank X is using us, then they're going to become a prospect and try to figure things out.
Right.
So one of the things we do is we actually deploy our solution for an interested prospect, as long as they're qualified and seem to be serious about buying something and will at least semi-acknowledge that they had a problem they need to address. So in doing that, we prove out the value proposition. We can stop the attacks immediately. We can tweak it on the fly to let them see how responsive we can be. So we think that's the best way to do it. We have solutions that we deploy in the cloud. And so that gives us a lot of flexibility in terms of deployment options. It's also a pretty light deployment. You don't have to have a huge staff to deploy a solution like ours. There are some that you need a room full of really smart engineers.
IT department involved.
Yeah. So we kind of, our intelligence in that area is outsourced to our customers, and they basically can practically flip a switch and have our solutions immediately available.
Now, any tips for individuals out there that are kind of worried about this? Is there anything they can do individually?
Yeah, again, that's back to the whole focus of the National Cybersecurity Month. As an individual, we have lots of passwords, and we like to keep it simple so that we can remember them. We like to write it down so we won't forget them. Those are horrible habits. Your passwords need to be very complex. They should never be written down. They should be changed about every 90 days.
Oh my.
Some say 60 days. And that's a real memory test. So, it's just sometimes you don't, you know, big breaches that get publicized are only a fraction of what actually happens. There's an estimate that somewhere between 70 and 80% of breaches aren't yet discovered. So for everyone
they're ongoing.
Yes. Mm. And that means if your information was in that breach, you may not find out about it until one, the company finds out about it. And then they talk to their legal counsel and their marketing
people.
It
could be six months or a year from when it happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, so you have to assume that your information is compromised, and changing passwords is a good routine. One of the most commonly used passwords, shamefully, is 1234. A, B, C, D. If you need six digits, they go a couple of extra digits in the same direction. So if you're a cyber criminal, that's the really low-hanging fruit that you go, oh, my God, there's somebody still doing this, and they need to pay for this. So I think that's a lot of it. And again, back to the emails, if you get an email that looks suspicious, ignore it. Talk to whoever supposedly sent it, but don't do anything to even forward it. Can be damaging. And just be alert. Be smart to what's going on and what seems too good to be true. If you get an email from a foreign prince that says he wants to give you lots of money, laugh, but it's still going on and there's still people that respond to them.
What about those kind of software password protecting, you know, where you have one password and then you just dump it all in that thing? Is that worth doing?
Those can be good. Yeah. Again, my personal nature is I worry about those because if they get breached, then everything's given up. But I'm sure those companies that do it, there are apps that do it, there's software that does it. In the business world, we offer a single sign-on solution that basically says you only need one password to get to the 90 million things you have to access in your company. That's a very effective way for a company to deal with encouraging strong, well-structured passwords that are hard to guess, that they can manage a process for requiring those to be changed regularly. So anything a consumer can do to kind of mimic that with Password Manager or even following the same stream of what you do, but changing digits enough that each time you change it, it's going to be different enough. So basic steps, just kind of it's what people have been saying about passwords for years. If it's too simple, if it's your birthday, if it's your maiden name, which used to be a very common way to get access to even the deepest financial information, it's probably going to be available on the web someplace. So, or you may be showing it in your LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter account. Yeah. So, that's another way they harvest information.
Well, congratulations. You've scared the heck out of me. I'm going to go change all my passwords and put lots of consonants and funny signs in them and all that, I guess, because that's not the case right now.
So it's been a good visit then. We've saved one person.
So if somebody wanted to learn more, if they have some challenges in their own cybersecurity, where can they go to learn more?
www.digitalresolve.com and contact us, and we will be back in touch with you quickly.
And then if I needed to get in the back end of your website, what's the password?
Password is 1234. And if it takes six digits, add a 5-6 digits.
So do you have any of these trade shows coming up? Is this the season for those things, or is that later in the
season is year-long. We actually have a team up in Toronto as we speak at a ISMG fraud summit. And that has representatives, companies from all over the world, lots of banks, but lots of business as well. And we're represented there today.
So if it's an important show, your crowd will be there.
Yes.
And ready to visit with some folks that probably use the help.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your story. How about hanging out with us? We're going to visit with a couple more guests.
I'd love to.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us the CEO. That's the Chief Executive Officer, Chief Cook and Bottle Washer, Grand Poobah with the Emery Group, Mr. Luis Emery. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Are you as scared as I am about this cybersecurity thing? Did you learn anything in that last segment?
Oh, plenty. And have some experience on personal with my children on that.
So. Ouch.
The weak link. They always find the weak link. So, Luis, tell us about the Emery Group. How are you serving folks?
Yes, we are a custom home building company and energy consultant focusing on sustainable building. And that recaps, you know, that summarizes. We have multiple services among both divisions, but we focus on the custom side or building on coming up with solutions that make a building very healthy, durable, efficient, and comfortable, whether residential or like commercial. And on the energy rating side, we work with mostly with multifamily developers in the state of Georgia that are building a lot of apartments for the Department of Community Affairs. who would require some form of building advisor in their team in order for them to qualify for low income tax credits. So these are low income housing.
So now you also work for, like, if I have an older home, you can come in and do some work to kind of bring
correct.
It up?
Correct. So it's basically two divisions. And under the construction, we could do improvements and remodelings and renovations mm-hmm. and bring that existing home up to par to energy codes, but beyond that. Because our standard is our homes, our custom homes are 10 to 15 years ahead of existing code. Okay.
So what does that look like in a home? How do you do that?
Well, thinking on residential custom homes, sure. Basically the home, the interesting thing is going to look exactly the same from the exterior as any other home.
Right.
What we're changing is the bones of that house, okay? We're not leaving anything to chance and for the trades to guesstimate how things are going to work in the house. So we take a lot of pride and put a lot of effort on upfront designing, which is not typical for residential homes. You would see more engineering teams and architects involved in commercial, institutional work and residential. It's like, yeah, let's, as it comes, we'll deal with it. Okay. No, it's somewhat a reality. So we would, in our process, we divide it in pre-construction services and the actual construction. So in that pre-construction, we're asking our client, listen, what are your goals with this future home? Tell us a little bit about your house and what you're trying to achieve with this. Because we've been doing this for 10 years now, we're drawing people that in general have some concern or their values are aligned with our value proposition, which is giving them the most healthy, durable, and efficient home they can afford, okay, at their budget, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's a combination for building a house. There are many components that go into it, more than 700 line items in our budget. So our expertise is making sure how we combine all those into standard, good, better, best to squeeze the value to achieve those benefits that our clients are looking for, which is a healthy home or energy efficient and so forth.
Okay, that's three times now at least that you've used the word healthy.
Correct.
With home. So help me understand that. How does a home become healthier?
So yeah, that's industry is going that way. You know, consumers, millennials, and everybody is beginning to think about, okay, I spend a lot of time in my house, I better have a healthy house. But that's kind of like a fuzzy concept. What makes a house healthy, right? So the way we approach that is one simple approach is we are very mindful into the materials that go into building that house. All right. For example, we don't close walls if they're wet, all right? So you let the lumber dry out before putting insulation and drywall and all that.
Because if you don't, is that where the mold or something?
Yeah, moisture and all that, it's going to be trapped in that wall, and uh-huh. long term it's going to give problems. And that's one little example of those 700 things that you can do. Drywall, we can use formaldehyde free or absorbing drywall that purifies, if you would, the air inside the house, okay? Flooring selections, we use products that are certified by either EPA Indoor Air Plus program or by DreenGuard. So you have, consumers now have the opportunity to choose among many, many products that have been certified to have low emissivity, both on VOC contact and formaldehyde. So that's just one little thing.
Well, that's like three things right there I never even thought of, never even crossed my mind.
Absolutely.
The materials in the house, and then there's the air you're breathing, right? So there's that system too, right?
Correct. So it's a holistic approach to construction. It's not about one silver bullet. You know, you're not going to have a healthy house if you just do that with the materials.
Okay. Are you just like a nice guy who's just one of those people that wants a better planet, or is this good business? Like,
it's both.
It's both.
Yeah. We've been for 10 years. We've adapted our business model through time. Now we are in the custom build to suit because it's not yet here in Georgia for the masses. There are some national builders kind of putting a little bit of radio ads about, hey, buy our homes, are healthy. And they may throw out an energy label or something like that, okay? But in the rest of the nation, especially in the Midwest and the West Coast, you have, this is the norm. There's this organization called the Energy and Environmental Building Alliance, which is the mothership of this thing called building science for residential home construction. Okay. So this is where all the nerds in the nation 40 years ago got together and say, well, how can we make these homes be better? And that's where this industry of building advisory, that's the second division that we have in our company, that building advisory, how do we come together to address all these problems about poor indoor quality, efficiency on the homes and all that? But going back to your question about if you do this, do you have a healthy home? Not really. It's the materials that you put in, all right? But if you have a very leaky, let's use a leaky home, a drafty home, it's going to bring all the outdoor environment into your house. Or if it's not properly designed, it's going to be drawing air from your poorly built crawl space and your attic. So having a very, very airtight home, it's going to mitigate, reduce the amount of unhealthy air that comes into your house, okay? However, reports are out there saying that, yeah, the air in your house is more polluted than outside. You should be living outside.
Ouch.
Okay. But you need to make it very, very tight.
This is Scare Stone Week.
I know. Right? I don't
with
know
the cybersecurity. And-
No, and you're right. So you ventilate it. Make it tight and ventilate it right. So in our builds, we're thinking, okay, if we're making it very, very tight, we need to, then you control the source of where you're bringing fresh air into your house. So you're not leaving it up to, nature to bring fresh air into your house. No, you're saying, okay, we're going to make it very tight. We're going to draw air from this side, the backyard, through a fan or an ERV, or, you know, different strategies, and we're going to dump all this air into the house to keep that house crisp, you know, that feels great. So now I'm talking about crisp and feeling good. So by doing a healthy home, efficient, then you are controlling the comfort side of the equation as well, because if it's not drafty, guess what? You're using 100% of your house, all right? You don't have that bonus room that you never go in because you can't use and all that. So it's a, again, it causes an effect on how all this 700 plus things come together to give our clients that value. And in that aspect, obviously, there's a big spectrum of healthy, efficient, and durable house. You know, you can be on this side, on the left side of the spectrum, or on the right side. And just simply put, on the left side of the spectrum could be for those in Georgia, a Earthcraft house, which is a home sustainable program sponsored by South Face Energy Institute, which is voluntarily a builder can participate, and it goes through some building advisory. So it's a certified green home, okay? I don't use green. I like to focus on the value proposition. But then on the other side of the spectrum, you have what the industry and the nation has calls net zero homes. Net zero homes are these homes that are produce more energy than they consume, all right? But to get there, you're really paying attention to the low-hanging fruits on how to make a home very efficient, and then you bring in renewables, such as in Georgia, solar panels, to offset your carbon footprint of the energy that you're using. So it's a fascinating way of building homes. And you don't have to break the bank to actually own a house like this, all right? We've built in different price point, but it's been a challenge lately given the political environment for bringing materials to the U.S. and labor shortage to be able to address the lower low budgets. Okay, so we're focusing more in the middle to high end, where we have a little bit more relief to justify some of those costs.
Now, when you're doing the actual building, like your team is cutting wood and doing things, or you're advising kind of architects and builders?
We are the general contractor, so we put the team together. So mm-hmm. on our construction division, residential, we do design build. So we're talking to the client, understanding what they want, but it's not only those qualities on the house. It's like, tell me about the house. It's right. a modern craftsman, you know, what
right,
style.
Exactly. There's a lot of variables. Yeah, this is one element of it.
Correct. So we're listening to all that, and then we have draftmen to kind of convey that that vision, okay? But the very first question that I tell my client is, what's your budget, okay? Because we're not going to go in a circles over here designing something that it might look great on paper, but we just can't afford it.
Build it, right.
Because as I said, there is good code, good, better, best. 700 line items.
Right.
So a combination.
You
got
to prioritize.
Correct. So we work that way. We're not bidding job. You know, when people come to us, the same way they're interviewing us, we're interviewing them. If there's a good fit, we say, okay, this is a early partnership, and we go.
So now, are people going directly to you, or do you meet people through like architects and build people building neighborhoods? Like, how do they even find you?
Well, I'm that odd guy here in Georgia that if you Google, energy efficient home or net zero home, I show up, you know, first.
So the consumer is actually finding correct. You, not the architect or any
correct.
Of these other people.
Correct. On the construction side of right. The company.
Now, you decided to kind of form your company as a B Corp. What was the thinking behind that?
So, yeah, it's basically.
And first, tell everybody what a B Corp is.
So, B Corp is a certification process that any company can go through. Through B Lab, where you demonstrate to B Lab that you are a social, responsible, and environmental friendly company.
Right. B is benefit, right?
Correct. So, what in the past people would call the triple bottom line, it's not only about the financial, economic side of things, it's also about, you know, business, environment, and community.
Right.
All right. So, for several years, we've been like that. But we never claimed it.
Right. You were doing it, but you just didn't kind of get certified.
Correct. Our homes are, you know, we're green-minded when it comes to building a house, okay? We support different housing efforts in our community. We're doing these things at a national level with that organization that I mentioned and all that. So we were like, you know what? Let's claim it. Let's walk the talk, right? So nobody has any doubt that we are the best choice out there.
Right. And then so you went through the process. The process isn't simple. You don't just write a check and become a B Corp, right?
No.
You got to get certified.
Do you have to structure yourself differently? Or
no, that's the interesting thing. So it's a self-assessment process with B Lab. When we did it last year, version 3, they just changed that. So we kind of got in last minute. Thanks God, because the new one is a little bit different. Yeah. So it's a self-assessment process where they're pretty much looking at all your business activities, community engagements, corporate culture, and so on. So you self-rate through this document, and you have to have a several exceed a certain number of points. Mm-hmm. When we did this, we were short by 15 points, okay? And we were like, where can we focus? And we had the great opportunity to partner up with the Terry College of Business at the University of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Go Bulldogs. Great game. And so a team of MBA students and undergraduates was put together to assist us in the process of analyzing and going deeper into this sales assessment. So for 4 months, I had 5 or 6 students
with following you around.
No, in my conference room, going and checking timeline. Okay, these are the deliverables and all that. So in reality, we just had to formalize and document a lot of things that we were doing already. Okay, and then it's a self. Every 3 years, you need to recertify and recertify. But it's so meaningful. I don't know. Business radar here. A month ago, B Corp was a big subject in the nation because the top 200 CEOs of corporate America have their roundtables once a year, and their declaration, if you compare what they were declaring to the B Corp mission, is like
right.
So hopefully, more would follow. Obviously, we're just a little tiny speck, you know, when compared to corporate America. But I think the aggregated effort of many like us, this is a country built by entrepreneurs, will eventually have, a meaningful impact.
Right. Well, every journey begins with the first step, right?
Absolutely.
So now, if you're a consumer out there that's thinking about, having a healthier home, how can someone get a hold of you?
Yeah, the simplest way is to go to our website, which is www.emerygroup.com, and let me spell that out. That's IMEREYGROUP.com.
Well, I think this entire conversation is wholly consistent with our pro-business, gluten-free, dolphin-safe programming here at Business Radio X. So I think maybe we ought to pursue this thing as well. I love the idea of having like a B Corp team of interns, like to help us get the job done. That was really smart.
Absolutely.
Well, keep up the good work, man. Congratulations on the momentum you've achieved already.
Thank you so much. Appreciate having you.
Hey, stay with us. We're going to visit with one more guest, all right?
Absolutely.
All right, Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
Okay. Please join me in welcoming to the show with significance. How about that for an organizational name? Miss Tricia Stezzi, good morning.
Good morning. So glad to be here.
Good to talk with you. So some of these ideas that Luis was sharing got to resonate with you extremely well, right?
Exactly. I'm happy to follow Luis. He's a great example.
So yeah, tell us a little bit about your organization and what you're out there trying to do for folks.
Okay, great. So, well, actually, my purpose as a business is to help unleash the potential of people and brands to be a force for good. And so why do I want to do that? Because really, the power of making change in the world really sits with the individuals that are making choices in their own lives and making choices and using their influence in their companies where they work and even in their communities. So it's kind of what I do is help brands get their people, as in consumers and employees and even people in their supply chain, involved in working towards something bigger than just making money. So making money is vital. It's important. We need to do it if we're in business. But kind of like if you think of a doctor, they may make a lot of money, but that's not what they do. That's not their purpose. Their purpose is something different, to heal or to, do surgery or whatever, to make people's lives better. So kind of what I do is, with significance, I work with companies to help them find really what's the greater purpose of what they're doing and how can we help change the world while bettering our business at the same time. And those two things really can go hand in hand. And I actually want to go back to something we just heard, which was the fact is I've been doing this for about 20 years, but now we're kind of hitting a tipping point where, the philanthropy world understood this and causes understood this, but now the business world is on board and seeing that when we give people a chance to contribute to something greater, when we use our businesses to make change and engage with people around our values, our businesses outperform the status quo. And so that's why you see, the CEO roundtable saying, hey, we can't only focus on shareholder value. We have to also focus. It's a multi-stakeholder approach, because when we do that, our numbers go up. So it's win-win. That's where my world is. And also, like a year and a half ago, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, so controls the most money of any investment firm in the world, $6 trillion. When he writes a letter to his CEOs and says, hey, I want to hear reporting that's beyond just financials, but how are you living your purpose? People start to listen. So why are these CEOs and why is Larry Fink talking about purpose? Because it's good for business and it's good for the world at the same time. So that's kind of where my focus is doing well and doing good. And there's many ways to do that, from enabling your employees to come to work as a whole person, meaning that, you know, understanding how diversity inclusion impacts productivity, right? So if someone is under stress and having to kind of only bring half of themselves to work, they're not going to be as productive as if they could bring their whole self to work. So you can kind of see where some of the stuff is really obvious, but people are missing this opportunity really to get things right. So other ways that this comes to life is kind of when you know your purpose. Say you either know it from the beginning, like a Whole Foods, and they're about nourishing the world, and they take that purpose and they bring it through how they treat their employees, how they deal with their supply chain, and you know, their interactions with their consumers. So that's kind of in their DNA. And so that's different than, say, philanthropy, where you're writing a check like, okay, well, we're doing what we do every day, but we'll write a check over here to kind of make ourselves feel better that we gave to something. That's different than every day in our operations, asking ourselves, are we living our purpose? And so I kind of want to share with people that really of any size business, you can do this. So it doesn't matter if you're a huge multinational corporation or a small entrepreneur. If you look for the ways that you can help your, you know, everybody have be part of something greater, then you'll differentiate yourself. So like one way is becoming a B Corp is saying, look, this is what I stand for. These are my values. So it's, you know, people that care about that, like millennials and Gen Z, which if you're in business, you better pay attention to.
So you've heard of this B Corp thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you're familiar with this.
Definitely. So basically that, you know, they're trying to create, they have created a standard around to avoid greenwashing and cause washing and all that. B Corp has like standards that everybody can see, like, we've met these standards. This is how we apply this in our business. And so, it's a great thing to look for when you're comparing businesses, to work with.
Now, right now you're working on a Champions of Good campaign. Can you share with the listeners what that's about?
Yeah. So, and also I didn't mention that in my insignificance, it's kind of a couple buckets of work. So one is consulting to help companies find, strategies to be, you know, purpose-driven strategies, right? And so then I also have a purpose-driven speakers bureau, because sometimes, like, once you kind of hit on, look, this is what we really care about and what we want to engage around, then we can help you bring in some people to get everybody fired up and engaged, and then we build engagement strategies beyond that to kind of bring this purpose to life. So something that's evolved out of those things is a campaign I've created called Champions of Good, which I'm a big fan of scaling up things that work, right? All of us business people are. So once you find something that you're engaging with, people are connecting with you on your values, then you want to get the word out bigger, right? So what I've done is I bring the influencers together, so professional athletes and entertainers, with your business and your cause and your purpose. And we create events together that involve the community and your employees. So remember, it's all about people. You got employees, and we put them together on a project and invite consumers to join in. And then we add this element of the influencer, so we can create a lot of attention on your brand to showcase this wonderful work you're doing that's really in the DNA of your company, and showing that you're making authentic contributions around your values. So Champions of Good is about that. And we're launching in a week before Super Bowl in Miami. We're building a playground and involving some, and I can't announce yet, but some exciting NFL athletes to be part of that. And this is, and we, you know, we, everybody, this is like a custom approach you need to take with purpose, right? So in this case, we wanted to shine a light on social justice issues. So we're inviting the law enforcement to come together with NFL players to build relationships while they build a playground And then we have some other programs that bring that forward. So Champions of Good is really about bringing influencers and a company and a brand together with the cause and engaging in the community.
And then part of your service is you're this kind of mega connector that is kind of herding all the cats.
Yes, I love herding cats. So yeah, I love connecting. And since I've been doing these corporate cause strategy, doing this for about 20 years, I kind of understand how to put these pieces together in a way that works for everyone. Because sometimes a cause assumes a company can do something and vice versa. And the same thing with the influencer. So I'm able to put it all together in a way that works for all the parties and optimizes the project.
Because if you try to pull this off and you don't know what you're doing, even if you are genuine and you're authentic, it may very well not come off that way. And that's going to do you more harm than good, and the cause more harm than good. Is that accurate?
Right. So it's really important to get this right. So if you kind of just think, oh, I'm just going to whip this together, it can do damage because authenticity is key. You know, everybody has a really strong BS-ometer right now. It doesn't matter what age your audience is, they're going to know if you're kind of faking it. And so it's really important to get this right and think it through. And how does this fit within your larger strategy? And so that's some of the expertise that I bring to this project.
Now you have a summit coming up, right? Can you talk a little bit about that, the Sideshift Summit?
So this is a different project. So Significance is my company, and then I'm also involved with my partners over in Europe, and we're launching Sideshift, which is something that we haven't seen before, and we're excited to bring it to the world, which is the first social opportunity network. So what we have found is that actually in sustainability and in many different causes, a lot of the solutions already exist. They're out there. But we have all these silos and people aren't really talking to each other and they're not aware. And also individual people feel overwhelmed. Like, you know, most people kind of have a sense that we got to do something about climate change, but they think, you know, what can I do? I'm one person or I'm one small company. But actually there's a ton of solutions. So what we've done with Sideshift is, we're gathering together a bunch of solutions that work from around the world and so kind of creating a space where people, individuals, can plug in and find something that resonates with them or they can take action. So we're launching this with a free summit, which starts this Thursday, September 26th. It's 11 days of content. There's a theme every day of content. And we have these 50 thought leaders that we've interviewed. So everyone from, Raj Sasodia, who is the co-founder of the Conscious Capitalism Movement. We have, Bob Chapman, who's the CEO of Barry Waymiller. He was just named number 3 CEO in the world by Inc. magazine. He, created this amazing process called Truly Human Leadership. And in our interview, we talk about, it's like a $3 billion company that's had double digit increases in, year over year. So it's extremely successful business. And what he does differently that is a big part of he believes his success is he treats every single person at his company, 14,000, as if they were his precious child. So he talks about the power of caring in business. And not only, does it, you know, he can spew out all the different numbers of why this is great for business, but that's not why you do it. You do it because you should care about people. But by the way, the business case is there. Here you go. So we have, we also have Tom Saki, who's the CEO of TerraCycle, talking about, you know, all the different ways we can recycle in phases. So the point is, what we've done is made these interviews easily accessible, free, and there's little clips so you can, we want people to be able to like go to what inspires them, watch a little clip, and if they like it, sure, watch the whole video or not, or otherwise explore elsewhere till you find something. Because if everyone takes one step, they'll take a little action forward, that's how we can make massive change. Because every one of us has influence in our family. Like, what are we purchasing? What are we doing? What are our choices? We also have influence at our organizations. And so we don't realize that, but we actually do have more influence than we think. And then also even in our communities, maybe you belong, you know, to a place of worship or where you volunteer, you actually have influence. So once you kind of hone in on your own individual purpose, take a step into that where you're passionate, where your skills match up. And here's a bunch of examples. Then all of a sudden we can have a movement for forward progress. And by the way, at the same time, and this is what SideShift is really about. It's the summit is called Shifting Perspectives and Redefining Sustainability. And what we mean by that is, what is sustainability? It's creating a fulfilling and sustainable life. So we're all seeking that. You don't have to be a millennial to want to have fulfillment. But millennials kind of figured it out a little earlier. A lot of us wait till our midlife life crisis to go, I'm not fulfilled. So, here's a way to get started. So anyway, come join us at sideshift.net/summit. Register. You can have access for free and, kind of get started on figuring out where your next step is going to be in your purpose journey.
Now for you, Tricia, if somebody wanted to reach out to you to learn more about maybe kind of seeing how they can leverage this purpose-driven kind of wave that's taking over the world and maybe get the most out of it so they can serve all of those stakeholders, what are the coordinates for you?
Yeah, so you can find me at my website at significanceagency.com. And I'm happy to receive your emails at trisha@significanceagency.com. And I already mentioned SideShift, so.
And then any kind of, is there a low-hanging fruit for a company out there that they can do something today to get started on this purpose-driven kind of path?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it really starts with a kind of self-assessment and analysis of a lot of times many companies, if they think back to really when the company was originated, usually there was a greater purpose outside of just the making money part. You can kind of start with like, why are we here? What's the why really? And then we can build strategies off of bringing that to life in, all the different decisions that are happening and then making sure, people are part of that, that momentum that you're generating from that purpose.
That's right. Get back to the why. Good advice. And, once again, if somebody wants to learn more about significance, that's significanceagency.com. Well, Tricia, thank you so much for sharing your story today. And thanks to all of our guests here today. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.